September 3rd, Economic Development Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture meeting to order. It is 6:17 p.m. Clerk Mahler, would you please call the roll?
Chair Sperry.
Present.
Deputy Chair Litz.
Here.
Legislator Clinton.
Here.
Legislator Corcoran.
Here.
Legislator Kuick.
Here.
Legislator Stewart.
Here.
And Legislator Wall.
Here.
Ooh. You have 7 members present, 0 absent.
I love it. I love a perfect attendance. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, and Legislator Litz, would you lead us through it?
Yes, I would. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just a quick reminder on meeting structure. Priority is given to committee members for discussion and questions. Resolution sponsors are also given priority, and it is up to the chair's discretion to open up the conversation to non-members. First item on the agenda is approval of the August 6, 2024 meeting minutes. Are there any discussion or questions? Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Tonight we have 2 presentations being given to us. One is from the Ulster County Library Association, and that will be given by Katie Scott Childress, the president of the Ulster County Library Association. The second one will be from Jake Wiedemeyer, the executive director from Ulster County Soil and Water. And then after that, we will move into our resolution review on the agenda. So Katie, would you like to, do you want to do it from there? Or do you want to come up here? It's up to you, whoever, totally, whatever you want.
Okay. I'm happy to give you some space.
Never.
Okay. I'll stand. Yeah. I kind of look at this. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. So the Ulster County Library Association is an association of the 21 public libraries in Ulster County, and the legislature has generously supported initiatives that the 21 libraries share. So we have resources, which I'm going to go through here, that are only available to Ulster County residents. They're not available to the other libraries in our system because of this legislative funding. And I sent a copy of our proposed budget for 2025. Hopefully you have seen that. Right now, we have very popular museum and park passes that we lend out. They can be reserved online, so you can print your passes. Passes generally will admit a whole family to a place, and this has been a really good way for people to access culture, both in Ulster County, and we have some passes to places. We have a pass to the Guggenheim that's very popular, and some other attractions, nearby attractions, streaming movies, audiobooks, web accessibility tools, videos, craft and hobby grants, database, and library resources. So Opus 40 in Saugerties has been doing amazing programming the last couple of years, and so this is one of our most popular museum passes, and I think a lot of people are discovering what a wonderful place it is. This is also Olana that gets a lot of people out, and these are all of the museum passes that we are currently offering. So we work with as many local museums as possible, and
like the Hudson River Maritime Museum this last year found that it wasn't economically advantageous for them to sell us passes, so they increased their price because, you know, we do pay for them and support the museums. And so we still have the Hudson River Maritime Museum, which is great. Canopy is one of the biggest items on our budget, and it's going up this year. It is on-demand streaming video that includes Criterion Collection, TV shows? Yeah, mm-hmm. So educational videos and documentaries, and the great courses, which are, you know, university courses that you can take online, and then these, like, read-along and animated, so that there's, like, a whole kids' canopy area. Downloadable audiobooks. We could spend our whole budget on this and really not be providing enough audiobooks and ebooks. Circulation of ebooks is constantly rising, and we buy, you know, some of the most popular audiobooks so that people don't in the county don't have to wait so long to get the ones that they want to listen to. We have a web accessibility tool that we have invested in for all of the different libraries. And so anytime you're on one of the library sites, and then even when you're going into the different resources, it will do all these things like translate into a different language, change the font to make it much bigger, actually read out the text that's on the screen. And so this has been really helpful to make all of our websites accessible. Craft and Hobby is something that we started this year, and it's these sort of in-depth videos of all these different things like woodworking and, you know, painting and crocheting. They have this platform called Craftsy, which is in Spanish. And so there's a lot of video content also in Spanish. So instead of, like, you know, YouTube's great as far as it goes, but sometimes the quality is, you know, not so reliable. So these are curated, they're, you know, shot professionally, and they come in chapters. So you're like, okay, I don't want to learn about, you know, all of that stuff. I just want to go to this piece. So they're chunked up and you can get there quickly. Foundation Center is something we every year invest in. It's at the Kingston Library, and so people can research grants and nonprofits. Especially for grants, it's really helpful to have this. And it's one of these value-added things that, you know, none of the nonprofits would necessarily be able to invest in by themselves. So it's a great collaborative thing. We are investing more time and energy in doing social media publicity, because, you know, we have all these great things, but you actually have to let people know that these things are available, or else it doesn't do much good. So that's another thing that we have invested in this year. And then we have a service called Library Aware. So instead of paying for Constant Contact or MailChimp or these different newsletter platforms, we can do it through Library Aware, which also integrates with a bunch of, like, library-centric kind of newsletters. So if you love mysteries, you can subscribe to mysteries, and it generates flyers, and it generates all kinds of different really helpful widgets that have, like, the bestsellers on your website, and then you can click, and it goes right into the catalog, and then you can borrow it. So things like that, that, again, we could not afford, none of our libraries could afford to do this themselves. And so this is the value added of being able to have funds that we share resources like this. So for 2025, we are looking to add some really good services, major daily newspapers. So we are finding that there are many libraries in our county that can't even get a newspaper delivered because there's nobody who will deliver it. And libraries need to be able to provide accurate information to people. So what this does is it would allow access to at home to everybody in the county to these. And it's not the same as if you were subscribing to the New York Times. It's not the same graphical experience. You're going in and you're choosing, you know, today's paper or the book review or the Times in Spanish or the magazine. And then it serves up the articles of the day and so forth. And so this is the Times in Spanish, for instance. You know, I just clicked on one of the top articles that came up. And then, you know, this was a top article that came up in here. It serves up related content. So it's not like falling down a YouTube, you know, kind of rabbit hole where it's going to give you wilder and wilder things. It's actually giving you some relevant stuff. It also gives you a choice of translating into other languages. And so, you know, I translated into Japanese. I'm sure it's not perfect Japanese, but if your primary language is Japanese, this would be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we have a patron who that is the case. She would like this. And then it also has historical, so it goes back too. So it's nice to be able to research the New York Times. This is an article from 1991, and we know how that turned out. and then another really cool thing is all of these articles, you can save it as a PDF, you can email it, you can print it. In other words, you can share it and preserve it in a way that you really can't when you're a subscriber to the New York Times and you want to share an article. If you share it with somebody and they don't subscribe, they can't access it, right? So it's nice. And in this age of post information or something, or, you know, low quality information, it's important that people have access to actual newspapers with paid reporters. Universal class. This has been something that we've gone back and forth with. We stopped paying for it because the system picked it up, the Mid-Hudson Library system picked it up for the whole system. And now the Central Library is wanting to focus all of their money on ebooks because, like I said, you can't spend enough on ebooks. And so they dropped it, and we are going to continue it for the people in Ulster County because we have a lot of people who are enrolled in classes, and people get continuing education credits with these classes. This is something new. This is a reservation system. We have a reservation system now for library passes. It's okay, not great. This is a way better one that makes it easier to book your library, your museum pass, either digital or pick up a physical pass. It also lets you reserve from the library of things that your library has. And so you can borrow a computer, or we have binoculars, for instance, or we have some really cool tools, and you can reserve those. Libraries can also book, patrons can book spaces in the library, like you can book a study room. You can also reserve a service like tech support or notary, and we get a lot of people wanting to use our notary service, for instance, and make appointments with that. So all of this, you know, again, this is one thing that any one of our libraries would not be able to afford on our own. But when with a larger population, we get a better deal. And so this is a really great value added. So that's my presentation. And do you have questions for me?
Does anybody on the committee have any questions? No, that was great.
Do you anticipate, are you at the point of your budget, and do you anticipate asking for increased resources in order to be able to provide this, or is the current funding sufficient for you to be able to provide this?
So it's not, I sent in a proposed budget for 2025. Canopy is going up by almost 10,000 for next year. So that's one of the big drivers of needing, and we don't control that. It's just that people are using it, and then they turn around and say, well, this is how much you have to pay because people are using it. The things that are new are adding also universal class and adding the newspapers. So that accounts for the increase for next year. Yes. Yes.
I think the newspaper thing is great. I'm glad that that is on your agenda. I had a question about the grant program that you run.
The grant, you the mean foundation the Foundation Center? Foundation Centers.
Yes, but I thought there was something about how it teaches people to, like, write grants or apply for grants.
I don't know if it teaches people to do that.
Okay.
It's like a search engine, so it's basically, it's like a search engine. Like, not all libraries can afford to have access to it because it's based in New York City.
Okay.
And so you can get access to the Foundation Center through this. And then you search, like, it's a portal where you search keywords to find grants that line up with those keywords. And then you would just have to follow their grant process.
So you could put in, like, Kingston Arts Children or something like that. And you could find funders who might be a match.
Yeah.
And then you also, it has things like 990 Finder and different ways that you can actually research the nonprofit and see how much money they give away, you know, what, you know, how long they've been around, all kinds of things like that.
I was just curious if there had been any outreach to the municipalities about maybe working with the towns to help them.
With Foundation Center?
Right.
I mean, I think it's geared more towards nonprofit.
Nonprofit.
Yeah, yeah. So arts and, you know, all kinds of nonprofits that rely on grant funding. I don't think I don't think it has municipal grants.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was my question.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to put that
again. Yeah, yeah.
Great. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you
so much. Care. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You deserve a clap.
We appreciate your support so much.
Thank you. Thank you. The next presentation will be by Jake Wiedemeyer.
Why have I sit over here and threw my back out a couple weeks ago? I'm okay.
Are you going to make it? You might need some help. Maybe like a couple of crutches? No?
I still have my cane in my car.
Oh.
Ridiculous.
Where do you want to be here?
I'm going to sit right there.
Oh.
Hi, my name is Jake Wiedemeyer. I work for the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District. I've been with the district for 22 years. As of last month, I'll have Travis Ferry with me. He's our technician, my right-hand man. Also, what I really appreciate is Leslie Zucker from Cornell Cooperative Extension. She's here to support us. And also, we have Herb Blitz, Kathy Nolan, our board members / legislators. They've been very supportive of us over the years. So a lot of what you're seeing tonight has a lot to do with them. We're going to do the movie first, or?
Yeah.
These are a lot of fat photos. There you go. Want me to do it?
Yeah.
Well, I want to go.
Press the button.
The
right arrow. I don't know. We'll find out. Is there
Welcome to Ulster County, New York, where the beauty of the landscape is matched only by the richness of its soil. but preserving that soil and managing water resources is no easy task. That's where the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District comes in. The devastating effects of the Dust Bowl in the 1930s brought national attention to the need for conservation efforts. In response, the federal government established the Soil Conservation Service, now known as the Natural Resources Conservation Service, to provide technical assistance and support for soil conservation efforts. Since its inception, the district has been at the forefront of conservation efforts, working hand-in-hand with farmers, landowners, and community members to protect our natural resources.
Hi, my name is Jake Niedermeyer. I'm the Executive Director of the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District. We are an action agency. A lot of what we do is engineering and implementation of water quality, erosion, sediment control, and soil health projects. So we help out rural communities, agricultural communities, urban communities. So we've been doing this for almost 60 years. We're all about soil health here. We have a no-till drill rental program. We have a local cover crop program that's available to all Ulster County farmers. And another thing that we do is nutrient management recommendations, so people aren't putting down too much fertilizer or too much manure. So we're all about soil health and keeping farmers in business.
Under the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District, we run a stream-side revegetation program for our landowners. The Ashokan Watershed Stream Management Program is Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County and Soil and Water Conservation District. Right? At the program, Soil and Water is the technical lead. We provide the guidance, technical knowledge to be able to restore these ecosystems, whether it's restoring a stream channel or restoring the floodplains adjacent to those stream channels.
It's really important to monitor stream restoration projects to see how they perform and function over time after they experience floods, as the vegetation matures, to make sure that everything is functioning as it was designed to do. Soil and water is an integral part in getting these stream restoration projects done from assessment, design, to implementation.
One of our greatest success stories is when we implement a practice and the farmer lets me know within weeks how much their operation, their lives are easier from what we've done.
We are and what we do. It's very important. And I feel it's a good way tool for the public to know. We're here to help people. We're more kind of like a caring profession. We deal with a lot of landowners in distress, whether it's flooding, erosion control, farmers, you know. So again, we are more of an action / caring agency. But who we are is our staff. Our core staff and the Highland office is Chris, Travis, Cooper, our new intern, and myself, and then our NRCS partners. So we have a full office down in Highland, and then we have a satellite office up at Shokan with Bobby, Allison, and Mark. So, and then here's our board members, but both offices are full, and we're in a good place. We're humming. We help out a lot of people. So Leslie, she's here to support us, but she does a lot of education and outreach. She helps support our programs, and we're very, very good partner with CCE in general, with the stream side and the ag side. So what have we done this last year? We're just speaking about 2023, what we completed. So again, we did a covered barnyard, town of Marbletown. We got it done December 29th. Dennis and I were talking about costs. So a lot of what we deal with is inflationary costs. So you plan a project, and within a year, sometimes roof trusses can go up 40%. So we used the state funding of $50,000, and then we have a local ag funding, and we contributed $15,000 to cover inflationary costs. So this is a water quality issue with the outside barnyard, and now we address the water quality. And with this covered barnyard, the cows, the beef cows, they eat and poop in the barnyard during the winter months. And instead of the farmer spending money on fertilizer, he has all this cow manure that he's spreading on his fields, and he's selling it as well. So everything that we do, like these engineering practices, are certified by a PE, okay? So we care about life and property, and it has to be safe for the farmer and the animals. Another thing that we did a rotational grazing system. Again, this is agricultural environmental management funds from the state. We used to get $100,000 for a two-year contract, but statewide, you know, all the districts are gobbling. $100,000 is nothing nowadays, so they doubled it to $200,000. So we're in the second contract cycle. So we did two major projects with almost $100,000. So same thing, rotational grazing is important to soil health, but also the farmer is able to, in some sections of this 35-acre field where it's flat, take first cutting off, right? And then with the regrowth, instead of firing up a tractor, mowing, tedding, raking, baling, he lets the cows do the work for second cutting. So he's able to extend his grazing system. So this is what we did down in the town of Rochester. He completed that December 27th. You know, a lot has to do with materials. So he used cedar posts. So, you know, posts went down in price and we were able to do it. This is current projects we're working on. This is an agrochemical mixing facility. This is an agricultural water quality project. That's the design on the left. We plan to do that either this fall or in the spring. And that's with Round 27. That's a competitive state grant, okay? And then we also do fuel storage facilities. And what we found over time, every farm, even the organic farms, they need diesel fuel and a lot of it. With these tanks, they tend to rust from the inside out, creating a water quality issue, groundwater quality. We put these bollards around it. This is battery powered. Farmer loves it, but we put these bollards around it. If you have multiple operators, right, it's good to have the bollards, especially tractors with pallet forks. So again, this is another water quality project that we're doing. Yeah, it's preventative. And like a system like this, with inflation, it used to cost us about $8,000 between the concrete, bollards, tank, and appurtenances. I think the cost of this is between $15,000 and $16,000. The sort of fuel tank, pad, bollards, appurtenances. So again, we brought in $231,000 in grant funds for those two practices. The Shokan Stream Management Program, we wrapped this up in November of last year. It's the Elk Bushkill Stream. It's in the Olivaria Valley. And so the photo on the left, this is funded by the DEP. That was a $1.2 million project. So we had our own staff, Travis, Allison, Bobby, Adam. They did the bulk of the construction inspection, okay? So they worked on behalf of the engineer, which was a significant savings. Plus, we have staff there, personnel, daily. We're looking at materials, installation of structures. So the photo on the left, right by that garage, is actually a septic tank, okay? If we did nothing, that septic tank would be exposed, right? So what we did was a natural channel design, the photo on the right, in-stream channel that we address habitat, salmonids, you know, trout. Okay, and also a lot of the successes of our projects, rocks are training wheels, but if you put plantings in, it merges everything together, so it's a more of a long-term solution. So before and after, and landowners are very happy. I mean, there's a lot of Airbnbers In my tenure, it used to be just locals or renters, but with the Airbnb communities, they get a little angry when we're making noise at 7 in the morning, but it worked out. We actually adjusted our work hours to accommodate everybody. So a lot of what the Shokan Stream Management program does before they select the project, right? And we're talking high dollar projects. The work on Hollow Tree Brook. So the staff does a stream feature inventory. They assess what's going on in the stream. It gets selected. So this is a high sediment source. It's actually a hot spot. So we've been doing this work for about 20 years. About $23 million have been invested in stream restoration projects. It's a lot less money than building a $20 billion filtration plant, okay? So this is a high sediment source site, and we are planning on constructing it in 2025. It's the most expensive project we've done. We're doing these engineered log jams, so we're doing a little different approach. You know, any trees that are going to fall in, we use them to make these log jams for grade control, right? So this is the first, and we'll see how it goes. But I'm very excited about this approach, trying something different versus rocking everything. So this is Mark on the left and one of our interns back from last year. And this is the design, so we're going to hopefully have it out to be permitted soon in the upcoming months. This is a typo. For 2026, we plan on doing a stream restoration project in Broad Street Hollow. Anticipated cost to be determined, but it'll probably be in the $1.2 to $1.4 million range. We do have a drone, so we're able to survey using a drone in high-resolution photography. So Mark, he's our drone operator. He's licensed, so it saves us a lot of money in the long run. Plus, it's fun to watch. And we get a lot of interns involved as well when we do stream feature inventory, get them out in the field. They're part of the data collection. Again, these stream projects wouldn't be as successful without the plantings. The plantings lock everything together. So we have Bobby Taylor on Bobcat digging holes. He's our interim stream project manager right now. And so he's running around doing CISB projects, Catskill Stream Buffer Initiative. And he's managing the Shokan staff. So plantings is critical. So the photo on the upper right, that was a bridge replacement on Mink Hollow Road. And having adequate riparian vegetation makes it more flood resilient over time. And back to climate resilient farming. We were awarded a grant a couple of years ago. It enabled us to purchase a no-till drill. And, you know, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. The farmers have expressed interest in the drill for over 20 years, so we finally purchased one. I was kind of winging it. Do we get a 10-footer? Do we get a 7-footer? And we've had high success with the 7-footer, so it accommodates a lot of people, a lot of different producers. And we had no idea how successful it would be. So the first year, it was out for 100 and how many? I can't read that. We did over 135 acres in the first year. And we've had more cover crop adoption, right? Technical assistance and equipment. So again, the climate, we're applying for now round 8, but this has been very successful. We also got awarded $148,000 for irrigation water management. And we're also doing the electrification of irrigation systems going from diesel to 3-phase electric. The thing is, if the nice thing about irrigation, what does that have to do with the environment? Well, if you could put in more drip irrigation versus overhead, there's a significant water savings. Also, when you go from drip overhead to drip, the farmers are more adept to doing crop rotations because overhead's really good for sweet corn. But if you could rotate sweet corn with pumpkins with mixed vegetables, so it's multifaceted. So there's Travis there surveying at one of the hottest days in the summer, he's out there. And this is just a preliminary design of one of the systems we're working on presently. And our local cover crop program. That was, the inception of that program was because back in 2022, Herb and Kathy and the board recognized that there was an economic farm crisis. So basically inputs doubled, crop, and we had horrible weather. The farmers are getting horrible prices for their, for, you know, produce, apples, you name it. So we stepped in and we started this local cover crop program to find out that the farmers would say, well, either pay our help or plant cover crops. So planting cover crops back in 2022 is off the table for a lot of the larger producers. They couldn't afford it. You know, some farms have planted 200 acres. So we started this program, plus helping them with soil health, soil sampling, and it's really been a success. And again, a lot of what we do is relationship building. So we've gotten to know a lot more farmers through this program. And we found that, you know, the first year we had about 530 acres in cover crops, and the weather was favorable, okay? Last year, all it did was rain. So there was a lot of people that wanted to plant cover crops, but they couldn't because it was just too wet to get in the field. And we still had a 29% increase in cover crop adoption. All right, let's do this. Nobody's nodding off yet. Again, a lot of what we do is partnership. Again, it's relationship building, but Cornell Cooperative Extension, they've been a fantastic partner with our stream program and with our ag programs. And Catherine on the left there, she's been really instrumental with our success and spreading the word and working with us. We did have a cover crop field days back April 30th, and I was shocked. We had over 30 participants. And everybody was interested, so we did a demo with the drill, discussed soil health, defed everybody, but how long did that go on? 3 hours?
I think so.
Yeah. I was really surprised. A lot of times when you do these events, maybe 7 people show up, but over 30 from at least 3 counties. Okay. So this is based on 2023 state reporting, easy numbers for me to grab, but 159 residents reached out for assistance. So on average, it's about 3 people a week that call the office for assistance. It's anywhere from just a simple phone call to site visits. I'd say half of the phone calls result in site visits. Okay. And they're like, well, what do we owe you? Right. And it's like, you're a taxpayer. We provide this for, you know, not for free, but you're a taxpayer and this is what we do. And we're doing Arbor Day again with the Department of Environment, another good partnership. 46 municipal requests for technical assistance in 2023 from all the towns, which is good. Okay, anything with culvert replacements and critical area seeding, stream bank repair, permitting with the DEC, you know, we're here to help them. So we're all over the place. We're assisting, working with Dennis, updating the farmland protection plan. I still have to read that draft. We're part of the Water Quality Coordinating Committee. I was doing a lot of work with the Lower Zopus. We did another Meet the Farmer event in 2023. Again, CCE, they worked their tails off to make that a success, where farmers either donate their product, and chefs, local chefs, showcase, you know, what the farmers produce. You know, so it's an open to the public event. And then we're helping out the Lower Zopus Stream Management Plan. Again, technical and cost share assistance to 41 agricultural producers. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a revolving door. So that's 41 individual farmers. And then next year it might be 20 of the same and 20 different farmers, but people know who we are. And again, Soils Group worksheets, you know, we do that as well. We haven't raised their prices in 15 years, $40 a Soils Group worksheet. Other counties charge 80, but again, we're not here to fleece anybody. We're just trying to cover our overhead. We're almost done. All right, so with our resources, our budget's about $560,000, and we bring in about $550,000. So it's to $560,000. So we basically break even. So when I say estimated, I like to lowball it. So with the DEP contract, it's based on billable hours with the staff, the core staff. And last year we brought in $83,000 in billable hours. So we're beyond the projection. You know, we get a lot of technical reimbursement support from New York State. Hopefully that'll be up to about $290,000 this year if we meet all our performance measures. with AEM, Agricultural Environmental Management. Again, a lot of technical assistance and projects with farmers. So with the three of us, Travis, Cooper, and myself, we estimated about $60,000 in billable hours, okay? So we could bill to that. Stormwater services, so I'm a New York State instructor for the four-hour erosion sediment control course. So I go to various counties and I teach the four-hour course. So we typically bring in between $7,000 and $8,000 a year. We go on a rock. Travis helps me with that. It's 4 hours of standing in front of 100 people going through 180 slides, the New York State DEC endorsed course. So it's nice having two people. And I try to make it funny. And then with our various grants, we do generate some revenue. But basically with our time and the admin, it's about 5% of a total grant. Try to keep it low. So what we do with project funding, what we're bringing into the county, with Part B, it's the state's been giving us Part B $6,000 for years. And that's for individual conservation practices. So this year we're using Part B for riparian buffer enhancement on at least two farms in the town of New Paltz. We have our ARPA funding. Thank you. $200,000 is coming our way. So we're going to buy another no-till drill, a 12-footer. Thank you, Kathy and Herb and Deborah, right? We're going to buy a row mulcher that's going to reduce herbicide application and increase organic matter. And we're going to buy a lime spreader. You know, those are the needs, what the farmers want. And we're creating a monster with equipment, but thank God we have a place to store all this stuff, and now we have the staff to cart it around the county. And New York State Part C Conservation Innovation Grants, again, that covers basically the inflationary costs of grants. So say you're awarded $100,000 to do an irrigation project. Pipe goes up 20%, and that's not cheap, PVC pipe. We're able to cover inflationary costs, engineering costs, okay? So that helps. We have our performance measures funding. We continually demonstrate to the state. We check off all the boxes, and we have a lot to do. So one report's 14 pages, like, oh, what did you do last year? I want to make sure that we're doing our jobs. And, again, the state, Ag and Markets, is very supportive of us. And at the state legislative level, we're very popular. You know, again, we have AEM. They upped it to $200,000. So we squeezed out $199,894 of projects. So we're doing projects on eight additional farms. And, again, we're doing three projects with New York State. That's another competitive grant. We did get climate resilient farming. Round six and seven, we applied for eight, so that's almost $278,000. And then with Hollow Tree Brook, that's going to be next year, $3.5 million. And with the CISPE program, about $45,000 in projects. So that program's humming. So we're bringing in about $4.7 million. So each year, the rate of return changes. Some year, I mean, this is 33 to 1 rate of return based on the current county allocation. But on average, it's anywhere between 15 to 20 ratio rate of return. But this year, it's a lot bigger because of this project. Where are we heading? Okay, so we're expanding our no-till and soil health programs. And we're using our Part C money. We're spreading the money a lot more, thanks to ARPA. More cover crops and more climate resiliency projects. We're expanding our AEM program. There's more money. We have more staff. We get more done. And then AEM non-competitive funding, again, they doubled it, which was good, right? The state did an analysis and said this is money well spent. So that's non-competitive funding. But every farm that works with us, we have to do a conservation plan. We get to know who they are, what they do, and what their needs are. So it's not we're not shooting from the hip, and we're applying for the CRF Climate Resilient Farming Round 8. If we are not awarded the funding, we're going to use some of that funding. If we're not awarded the funding, we're going to use ARPA funding to pay for the equipment, okay? And we're increasing technical assistance to Ulster County residents, all about reputation. The phone keeps ringing. Have you gotten busier over the last year and a half?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why we hired the second tech. It's working out really well. Increased stormwater services and district trainings, right? Those four-hour courses we provided to Ulster County for free. If you're giving us money, might as well provide a service to you. And let me see, I hate reading bullets. It makes me crazy. We're continuing the New York City DEP contract. So we're entering into another five-year contract, very strong program. It's a lot less money than building a $20 billion filtration avoidance plant, filtration plant. So that's going to be a $17 million contract. That's going to be through 2025 to 2030. And we hired, past tense, additional staff, you know, because, again, it's just the two of us. We do a lot of house calls, work with a lot of farms. You know, our stream program does need help. At times, we're a little understaffed. And so what my ask is that if the county can cover an additional $40,000, so we'd go from 141.5 to 181.5 to cover half of that position. And then between the three of us, but namely Cooper, we could help out the county with the MS4 permits and the mapping. We could help out with watershed efforts and all the watersheds. So we will be able to provide more services. So even at $181,000, we're still the lowest funded district in the Hudson Valley. And that's it. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? This is great, very thorough. Thank you so much.
Nobody fell asleep, except Leslie.
Leslie did. Actually, I was going to open it up to Leslie and see if there was anything you wanted to add to the presentation on behalf of Cornell.
Well, I just wanted to say we have a really good close-knit program out there in the stream program. And I'd say one thing I want to emphasize is that the staff we have are highly trained, and the city has been investing in our professional development over the years. And so I think you can view the staff at CCE and Soil and Water as a real asset to the county in terms of having highly trained professional stream managers, people who can understand the technical science and engineering that's involved, and everything from administering it, a lot of what I do and what Jake does, to delivering it on the ground and assisting municipalities with that. So I would say view us as a resource. And I just want to invite the watershed tour. We want that on behalf of the Shokan Watershed Stream Management Program. I want to invite the committee to a watershed tour that we're going to hold October 8th. And we'll be leaving on the tour from the AWSFP office in Shokan. And it'll run from 2 to 5 p.m. The program will start at 2:30. We'll go and visit a couple of sites in the watershed so you can hear from local elected officials and our staff about what we're doing and the benefits that we're providing to the towns and the county. And so we'll be wrapping that up at 5 because we know you have commitments. And if you'd like to join us, just let me know, let our office know, and we'll get you on the list and be happy to have you there. And I'd like to share with you what we do. More details. Okay. Any questions you have?
We'll share the information with the committee. And I guess your RSVP directly to you guys, right?
An email that you have that will go out if it hasn't already. Mm-hmm. There's somebody in there you can contact. You can call the AWSNP office.
Right.
Or email. So
okay.
Maybe we'll get you on the list.
Legislator Hewitt and then Legislator Stewart.
Jake, I'm wondering, was there any overlap with the Economic Development Department and the local position that Deb DeWan holds?
I don't know. No, she's helping administer the funds to us. So she's doing a lot of things in the background. And her and Nate and Kevin have been very instrumental in making sure, you know, there's a contract, you know, so we just hammered out the fine details of the ARPA contract for $200,000, and hopefully we'll see some funds by November, right?
Thank you.
Legislator Stewart.
I just wanted to say that
been in touch with Jake about working with Kathy and her and the administration to try to get funding for a watershed coordinator position. So that's something I look forward to. Further discussions. We've had some good conversations. Yes, specifically in the lower Esopus and the Rondout too, for that matter.
Yeah, we're presently assisting the town of Marbletown. If they get the grant with the water quality study.
Excellent. Yeah. So that's something else I want to talk to you about, so we'll chat offline.
Okay.
Legislator Hewitt.
In your line item about sales and service, I heard you talking about the services that you offer. Do you sell any products?
Yes. We have an annual tree and shrub sale. So we sell native tree and shrub species. We sell deer tubes, fertilizer tablets. They're just, you know, low-level, you know, just get the plant started. We sell a wide array of wildlife nesting boxes, bat boxes, bluebird, hawk, duck boxes. Am I missing anything?
Fish.
Oh, we did sell fish, but our supplier in West Edmonton isn't doing it anymore. I think they're slowly retired. They're quietly retiring. They quietly quit on us. So that was a very good statewide program. We did have a fish sale a year and a half ago. Very few people showed up. Yeah.
Thank you.
Were they like a fish house, you mean?
Yeah, Carb.
I know where there's a fish chantry.
Across the river.
No, upstate.
That's West Edmonton or no, Andes?
No, up near, like, Warrensburg and, like, the north. Yeah. Yeah, it's Warrensburg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's also one on the west side of the Catskills. In Ulster County.
Yeah, that's in Livingston Manor. I don't think they come out here.
We can make them.
We can make them. Mm-hmm. For us.
A little strong arm.
There's one across the river, too. And they won't come out here as well. People have to pick up their fish.
Mm-hmm. Legislator Nolan?
Just wanted to extend Legislator Stewart's comments. The request here for the increase in budget for the Soil and Water District is very modest. But what we've seen the district doing is really expanding services, and I think there's some really good synergies that could come from this investment in particular. So I think that the district is relatively underfunded, and this is a good chance to put it towards exactly, you know, the salary that will bring in the person that will help fill some gaps for things that people want to have happening in the county.
Thank you, Jake.
Thank you.
All right.
Any questions, Travis?
Oh, but I was wondering if you filmed your scene together today because you're wearing the same outfit. Mm-hmm.
This was a
uniform. That's for you.
I thought about it. Did you notice? I'm so cute now.
The magic of TV.
It was filmed on a Tuesday, and today is Tuesday.
And they're wearing the same outfit.
It's all in Water District uniform.
Okay. All right, so that is it for our presentations. We're going to move into our resolutions for tonight, for September 17 legislative session. So the first resolution is number 441, initiating the process to consider a countywide water and sewer assessment. So if you recall, it was on our agenda last month, but we postponed it because there were some amendments that needed to be made, and upon further discussion between the resolution sponsor, Chair Criswell, and the county executive's office, those amendments have been made, and they're reflected in your packet. So is there any discussion or questions from committee members?
I will move the amended version of Resolution 441.
First, we need a motion to amend the resolution as presented.
I just did.
19.
Didn't I say the amended?
Yeah, adopt the amendments and then adopt the resolution as amended. You don't get to do it in one thing.
My motion was to adopt.
Stop making stuff up.
The
motion. Is there a motion to amend the resolution as presented? Thank you, legislator Hewitt.
Good at this.
And it was seconded by Legislator Hewitt. Okay, all in favor on the amendment as presented?
Aye.
Great.
I'll make a motion. The amended version.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Adopt the resolution as amended was made by Legislator Litz. Is there a second on that? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Wonderful. Thank you. Moving on, we have resolution number 465, approving the execution of a contract for $513,488 entered into by the County Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County and the Department of the Environment.
Move for adoption.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions or concerns or thoughts or feelings about this resolution? Leslie, is there anything you would like to add on behalf of this resolution?
It's a continuation of a working relationship we've had between CSME and Department of Environment now for some years, and it's very beneficial to the local communities and assisting CC in delivering our flood hazard mitigation and coordination program and helping our communities become flood resilient based on climate change.
And this is a revenue contract. So motion was made by Legislator Litz.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Clinton. Over there. That was
Clinton. We got it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Legislator Clinton.
Boy, it's a rough night.
Professor Sperry is so tired. Okay. Which one's next? This one. Okay, 472. Next resolution is resolution number 472, designating the Ulster County Department of Tourism as the official tourism promotion agency of Ulster County Department of Tourism.
I'll move it for adoption.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Do you want me to say something else?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Short and sweet and to the point.
Oh, yes. Is there anything that you would like to say before we move on? I know you're here, so.
Just that I will be circulating to you the latest I Love New York economic impact of tourism for the Catskill region, and I will also be forwarding to you the one for Hudson Valley. You just circulate to other members and sort of take a look at it. It came out, the governor announced it at the end of last.
Okay, great. At the end of last week?
At the end of last.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. As we were heading into the Labor Day.
Okay.
As we would with towards Monarch.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. It just showed that Ulster County maintains its 42%. Share of visitation to the Catskill region, and the visitor spending was over $1 billion in 2020.
Wow, you're here.
Wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So, it's verified there, which was just family and orange season.
And I just wanted to clarify that this resolution is designating you guys as the official for 5 years.
5 years. So we need that designation to be able to apply for I Love New York matching funds dollars, where they give us $58,000. We need to match it with the same amount, then spend all of that exactly the way that I Love New York tells us to, in order to be eligible again. And the only people who are eligible for these funds are tourism promotion agencies or convention and visitor bureaus that are designated the official county. You can't apply for it otherwise.
Okay.
So this allows us to move forward. Their process does not align easily with our annual budget year. So this means we won't be behind
in
trying to apply for the funds.
Gotcha. Thank you for that.
Yep.
All right, so moving on to resolution number 473, which is authorizing the County of Ulster to submit an application and assurances to the New York State Department of Transportation in response to the notice of funding availability for Innovative Mobility Initiative Program Department of Planning. So this is just a resolution authorizing the department to make the application to apply for the opportunity.
I'll move it for adoption.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
All right.
Huh? There wasn't yet. Sure. What would you like to say? What would you? Go ahead, well, Legislator Hewitt.
There's ideas in mind for this, or are you just opening up action?
The grant application itself allows for different types of micromobility, including scooters and those types of things. We're focused on, quite frankly, microtransit. Microtransit options were originally discussed in this county in the last update of the transit plan. Microtransit was also discussed in something called the CAF study in terms of looking at microtransit opportunities between the counties themselves. Last but not least, the county participated with a NYSERDA grant from VIA, which is a private sector grant, which we weren't funded for, to look at microtransit opportunities in the areas. This particular grant also focuses on disadvantaged communities. The disadvantaged communities in Ulster County that seem to be amenable to microtransit are Elmville, Kingston, and New Paltz. So you're probably going to see something coming out of this as it relates to those communities looking at microtransit in those areas. We're keenly aware of the legislator's concern with respect to the lack of transit opportunities on Sundays in some of these communities. We're also keenly aware that there has been some loss of transit opportunities or the increase in transit opportunities in the Ellenville area because of, A, they had some taxi cab issues. B, as they've also are in the process of losing ShopRite, which increases the need for some of the transit opportunities in there. We're also keenly aware of the issues surrounding the campus in New Paltz as relative to that. I would say that the maximum grant here is about $3 million in operating costs. Those operating costs would be over a five-year period. You must provide the service for 5 years. There's an additional $5 million in capital costs. In general, the capital costs are not a problem for us, given the fact that where we are and what these types of microtransit systems costs are from a capital perspective. The operating costs are well beyond what a $3 million 5 year if we run microtransit in those communities. Well beyond. So the county will have a match for those. What that match will be is we're working on budgets right now, and we're working on service areas as well. But transit is not cheap when it comes to operating costs. Operating costs are probably you have $3 million available, operating costs are probably in the $7 to $8 million range over a 5 year period. So do the math, it's about anywhere between $700 to $1 million a year in county costs. And now we can recover some of that, perhaps, but not all.
I'm sorry, what was that figure?
I don't want to try to hone in on figures, so the range I would use is somewhere between 700 and a million. Maybe down and below that, depending upon what the operating hours are. But the idea is essentially to extend operating hours where we are currently not running buses. I want you to think about this, that one of the things we're trying to do is to balance what is where we are right now in a route optimization study. You remember that route optimization study? Where we are in that process versus where we need to be in order to submit this grant. The two of them don't dovetail nicely together in terms of timing, but we thought that there was an opportunity we wouldn't want to pass up.
Great, thank you.
Good thought.
I do want to add our thanks to the UPAT staff with respect to working with us in terms of moving this through and helping us understand what a budget would look like and what the service areas would look like. We would also want to thank the grant staff in terms of pulling this together for us.
Great. All right. So it's already, we've already voted. Legislator Litz made the motion. Legislator Deborah Clinton seconded. of gardeners.
And it passed unanimously.
All right, moving on to resolution number 475, authorizing the release of $2 million from the Ulster County Housing Action Fund to provide funding to 5 housing projects as part of the Housing Action Fund's annual notice of funding availability. This was submitted by the county executive. The Housing Policy and Oversight Committee met to review proposals for funding received through the notice of funding available March 11 to May 10, 2024. From the HPOC recommendations, the county executive is requesting the legislature to authorize the release of up to $2 million from the Housing Action Fund for the 5 different projects. One is in New Paltz, one is in the town of Ulster, one is in Hurley, one is in Saugerties, and one is in the city of Kingston. Are there any questions?
Which motion to adopt it?
Okay, is there a second? Right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. New business, the November committee meeting falls on election day. Mm-hmm. So unless you guys all want to take a field trip together to vote and have a committee meeting, Clerk Mahler suggests that we move it to Thursday, November 7th at 6 p.m. or immediately following the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee. Yes, and then energy environment is likely to be moved to Monday, November 4th.
November 7th, you said?
6th.
Okay.
7th at 6 p.m.
It's a Thursday.
I will not be available. I will be chaperoning 6th grade students at Frost Valley overnight. Do you want to have the meeting there?
Overnight?
On Thursday? Thursday to Friday.
Wow.
I'll bring the masking tape.
There. So if you want to, you know, be up on the road, come on up to Frost Valley.
I love that idea. Well, let's
We have additionally limited choices because the Monday that normally would be on the table the following week is actually the Veterans Day holiday, so Public Works also has to move.
I mean, if it works for everyone else, that's where I'll be. I don't think I'll be able to, like, call in, though, because reception up there is really on.
We're working on it. Yeah. You know, Archtop is saying that they're fast AF. Okay, so that's okay. New business. Am I reading old business? Yes. Okay. Clerk Fabella forwarded a memo from Planning Director Doyle on August 16th. Planner's memo regulating the development of warehousing with recommendation guidance for local zoning updates. Planner Doyle encouraged legislators to share it with their local officials and planning and zoning boards. It's been added to the OneDrive for your convenient reference.
Done.
Should we send it again?
Would you like me to send it again?
It's...
If you don't mind, that would be great.
Great. Okay, so we'll send that out again. Okay. Is there anything you'd like to say about that, Director Doyle?
No, I think the memo speaks for itself. I want to thank the staff, Robert Woodward, from the staff that kind of substantial interest in that, as well as members of the board that reviewed it and added comments and concerns associated with it. I would say that this came about in conversations with respect to the town of Flatico, which is facing a 400,000 square foot
mega warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Warehouse in its facility, in its area. And in conversations we had with Orange County and ISDOT and others, there is about, I'm going to get the number wrong, so I'm poking on the number, but it's over 5 million square feet of warehousing space currently proposed in south of us in Orange County. They're rapidly running out of A, patience, and B, room, in order to locate these things. So the thought being that we wanted to put our communities on notice that when you look at how their zoning statutes are written, they're really, really very broad and not regulatory in the way you would think that you should be regulatory with respect to some of these warehouses in terms of size and scope and scale. So that's why it was written. So I do have something else I would like to talk about.
Okay.
I want to go back to the housing resolution and the housing action fund. Do you recall that context for that was that the county would make available up to $3 million on an annualized basis for projects associated with the housing action plan. The NOFA went out. We had a number of projects come in, but as you can see from the app, from what's before you, there's about $1 million worth of authorization that was not reflected in our in the county executive's recommendations to award. The question I would ask this committee and obviously the housing committee is, we would anticipate issuing another NOFA sometime, probably early summer of next year. But is there something that you would want to do relative to that money that's sitting on the table now? There are a number of projects that are now much more, I would say, mature than when this application went out. And they may or may not be asking us for money, but certainly they're eligible. There's projects that are eligible for funding that have not requested. The other one that's out there is that we really didn't have a part of that application process with something called an innovation fund.
Mm-hmm.
We really have very good applications with respect to that. We now have a little bit more experience under our belt to look at what we could think about from an innovation fund standpoint. And you may start to think about asking people to apply rather than waiting for people to apply. I just bring that up because there seems to be the fact that the legislature has designated a substantial portion of its room tax to housing gives us an opportunity not to worry about spend. I shouldn't say not to worry about. We're always worried about it. But not to focus solely on spending the money down, but the idea that the money has an opportunity to be replaced. So I just bring that up. If there's an appetite for that, I'd appreciate a longer discussion about this and perhaps a continuing funding round until a new NOFA is issued, or at least a call for projects in certain geographic areas. So we can think about how to do that. I wish Kai was here tonight. He explains it a lot better than I
wish Kai would come every month.
Well, it was my fault that we got mixed up in terms of schedule. But the point I want to make is that the Housing Action Committee itself would be willing to put that effort in. Planning Department would be willing to put that effort in. We just don't have a direction from the legislature once the application process closes about how to open it up again or if you want to open it up again.
And I guess one question I would have in regards to that is, like, is there a point in the year where we can see how much we've taken in, right? I'm assuming, like, through, you know, that we can see through tourism and through, yeah, how much we've taken in so that we could say, all right, we're going to be replenishing at this point by this much so we could release more money if we wanted to. Yes.
If finance is up to date and making journal entries, then we, you know, I regularly come to Ways and Means and report occupancy tax collections.
Right.
So, and they're doing a much better job right now. They're much closer. So I would say, you know, next year you'll have a very clear, sort of a much clearer picture
through
the year.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
But yes, we can give you estimates of collections thus far.
Is it too much to ask quarterly? Is it like, you know, twice a year?
The problem is that occupancy tax comes in on the sales tax quarter.
Correct.
It's not on the calendar quarter.
Got it.
So you're always kind of lagging by
sure.
But yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And last but not least on this, I would say that finding a place to put this money in a budget was a challenge. Because there's really not a place that you can put this kind of money from an assigned fund balance to another So we got a place in the budget to put it. So we worked extensively with the legislative staff to make sure that it went, that they were comfortable in terms of where we put it in the budget. You will have another opportunity as we move to contracts to essentially approve or not approve those contracts as they come forward with respect to that.
Gotcha. Great.
Okay.
So be considered. Is, do I hear an emotion?
Yes, you do.
Adjournment?
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Bye.
Bye. Bye.